Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and today we have Lieutenant Yoni Goldstein. How are you, Yoni?
I'm fine, thank God. How are you?
Great. For those of you who are familiar with our Jewish actions, I'm sure many of you, you had a chance to read about Yoni in one of our recent editions of Jewish Action, and where we basically looked at different people who had very interesting careers, and yet they were able to still maintain their Orthodox Jewish lifestyle. And Yoni certainly is one of those who is 25 years old and is a U.S. Air Force pilot. Yoni, I guess it's really quite unusual for someone who's an Orthodox Jew. Are you the only one, by the way?
No, I'm not. There are a few of us.
There are a few. Okay, great. That's really interesting. I actually think I met somebody once when I was traveling, and he was based in South Carolina out of Charleston. Is that possible?
It's entirely possible. I knew a couple, one who was in Dover at some point, Dover Air Force Base, and a couple of Navy pilots and navigators as well.
Okay. So where did you grow up, and how did you become interested in becoming a pilot?
I grew up in Dallas, Texas, a great place to live. And ever since I was 2 years old, it's been my dream to fly airplanes. It's always been a lifelong dream since ever I could remember. It's been the only thing I ever wanted to do in my entire life. And I suppose in that way, I never quite grew out of it. It turned out to be a very fortuitous thing. So just had to make it work no matter what the circumstance.
So what kind of training did you have to go through to become a pilot? Now, you're a pilot of actually a, what do they call it? They call it a C-17?
That's right, the C-17 Globemaster. It's the Air Force's newest and most capable airlifter. It can fly all around the world and take off, let's say, in Seattle, and less than 48 hours later, we're on the ground in Afghanistan, landing on a field that is in the middle of nowhere at a high-pressure altitude, which means, 5,000 feet above sea level, which is pretty high, like Denver.
Wow.
But the field itself could be as short as 4,000 feet long, or even shorter,
wow,
depending on the circumstance.
Wow.
So it's a very capable airplane.
And I imagine, I mean, as a transport aircraft, it could hold gigantic amounts of cargo, correct? And also troops, right?
Right. We could fit over 170,000 pounds of cargo of all types.
170,000 pounds. How does that compare? Like, I mean, I don't have any bases, even though I fly, but if you're flying a 747, how much could they hold?
They can hold a comparable amount, but their short field capability, meaning their ability to land on a smaller airfield, is non-existent. And also, they can't maneuver as quickly as we can. We're a very maneuverable airplane for our size. Fully laden, which means our maximum weight is close to 600,000 pounds, and so therefore we're able to transport a large amount of material over a long range, but at the same time we can maneuver tactically in a low-level environment and get in and out of rough places very quickly and safely.
Interesting. And so I read a little bit about it, and it said that you could actually fly up to 24 hours in one clip at one time? Or is that not right?
We could conceivably, but we could do that with aerial refueling. Our maximum time that we can fly with multiple pilots and loadmasters is 24 hours from start to finish, but we usually stop in the middle for servicing or fuel, things like that. We don't always hit a tanker. In fact, it's not so common, but usually we have a 24-hour crew day, but we can fly, and we routinely do fly up to, up to 24 hours from start to finish with stops in the middle.
And now, I mean, in the article I read, it said that you wear your kippah. You're allowed to wear that the whole time?
I am. It's allowed in uniform. Our dress and appearance manual states that a religious head covering can be black or blue and may be worn in uniform as long as it doesn't interfere with aircrew functions. And there was an issue with foreign object damage. If there are high winds or something like that on the flight line and I'm walking around outside, I may have to take it off because if it gets, blown off my head, it could, God forbid, get sucked into an engine or something like that, and it could create a real safety hazard. And I don't want that to happen. So in that kind of case, I don't think there's any halachic issue with removing your yarmulke for safety reasons if damage or personal injury can result. But usually I wear it.
So normally you do. And how does it work as far as Shabbos is concerned. They wrote a little bit in the article about it, but I presume that's challenging, right?
It is. It's always a challenge. There are several ways in which I've been able to get the mission done at the same time, keep Shabbat as best I could. So, thankfully, my squadron and my crews are very supportive, and they help me a lot when it comes to, once we land. When I'm flying, of course, I'm under orders to do so. I have to complete the mission, and what we're doing is very important, fighting the war and everything. So I have to be able to fly the airplane, and I can't use a Shinoi because we have established procedures for safety and operation of the aircraft so as not to hurt anybody and get the airplane on the ground safely at our destination, and that's paramount, of course. But once we land, the halachic situation becomes much more murky, if you will. And so I have to have different ways and methods of getting myself and my luggage to either the lodging or the hotel room or whatever in a way that doesn't break Shabbat. And so my crew is usually very helpful. They open the doors and set the lights and everything. We have this conversation before we even get on the ground, so they can help me with doing this kind of stuff so I can, not just sit in the hotel lobby until Shabbat is over.
And I imagine you've found yourself in some pretty interesting places on Shabbat.
This is very true. I've spent Shabbat in Iraq, Afghanistan, Turkey, Spain, all kinds of different places.
It's really amazing. And then of course, when you talked a little bit about how most of the missions are during the evening when it's dark, and then you're waiting for the sun to come up and you could daven. So I guess you get a chance to daven nates more than most people.
Right. It was actually kind of neat. I just got back on Monday from an overseas trip. And I think it was Dover on Monday morning. We woke up before the sun even thought of cresting over the horizon. But once we got in the jet, we were about 45 minutes away from takeoff, and I was going to be in the seat for all the operations that we were doing that day. So the sun was about to come up, and I said, oh, hang on a second. I see the sun. Time to pray. Give me, 15, 20 minutes. And they were like, okay, just let us know when you're done. So I prayed and, put on my tefillin and talit and everything like that, and then got back in the seat, and we were good to go.
Wow, unbelievable. So you must have some incredible experiences. What could you just kind of share? I know you obviously can't share everything. We understand that completely. Are there one or two that you could possibly share with the audience?
Off the top of my head, there are a few different instances that I can think of that were really interesting. One of them was when I was deployed this past winter. I was deployed to a downrange location, and I was the Jewish lay leader on base because there wasn't one. There was another pilot actually who just left. He was flying another airplane, but once we got on the ground in our deployment, he'd already left, so I took his place. And it was around Hanukkah time. We had a lot of Jewish personnel who were in the Army or the Marines, rotating in and out. And I was called by the chaplain's office. There was a soldier who was looking for some Jewish material because he wasn't able to carry in his bags any, like a chumash or a sidur or anything like that. So we got him squared away, got him a menorah, got him candles, got him a sidur, a chumash, a kippah, and whatever kosher MREs he wanted. And that was really one of the most fulfilling experiences I had, was sort of helping the Jewish personnel who were rotating in and out from our deployed location with, keeping mitzvot and doing and sort of enabling their Jewish observance.
That's very interesting. Anything else?
I can't really think of anything else off the top of my head that I can really discuss.
No, that's fine. Now, your family lives in Seattle, right?
Right. That's where I'm currently stationed.
So you're married, or?
I am. I have a wife, Michelle, and two children, a girl and a boy.
Wow, that's great. So when you travel, you're away for usually like a week at a time. Is that what it is? Or could it be longer than that?
Generally speaking, a week at a time. Our deployments are about 2 to 2.5 months, which isn't that bad either, in terms of the scheme of things. The Army deploys for 9 months, the Marines sometimes even longer, and the Navy deploys for 6 months on their ships. So the Air Force, we generally have shorter deployments for our air crews.
So deployment means what? That you're on active duty then, or?
Well, I'm always on active duty. The difference is when I'm not deployed, every other week I go overseas, or once a month I go overseas on this trip and I come back. It's like a miniature deployment. A real deployment is when we are in process at an overseas location, close to or in the war zone for months at a time, and we do quick runs in and out of different airfields in that environment.
And so how does it work, like, career-wise? I mean, how long have you been in the Air Force?
I've been in the Air Force for nearly 4 years.
4 years.
And when August rolls around, that'll be hitting the four-year time and service mark, effectively, where I then would be promoted to captain. And then from there, here's how it works.
Okay.
I became a pilot in September of 2010. That was when I got my wings. And then I incurred, as a result, an active duty service commitment of 10 additional years. So at a minimum, I'll be serving 12. I would have served 12 years on active duty before I could separate or leave the service.
Okay.
Because the reason that it's so long is because the money that it costs to train a pilot is rather exorbitant. And I always want to do this as a career. So it really wasn't much of a thought in my mind to just get out after only 12 years. If I'm in for 12 years as it is, I may as well make it to at least 20 and retire.
Right, exactly. Well, it's really unbelievably fascinating. And I guess when it comes to kosher food, do they give you food, or do you have to bring your own?
I usually bring my own. The way it works with the Air Force and with air crew is very different than it works with the other services. With the Marines and the Army, you're given rations, or you have to go to a chow hall. With the Air Force, when you're deployed, sometimes you have to go to a chow hall, but usually you kind of fend for yourself. You get your own food. And I take a large duffel bag, and at least half of it is filled with food, and I use those Meal Mart Amazing Meals. They're actually quite good.
Oh, really? Yeah, those things I've read about.
They're delicious, and they're not too expensive, and in a pinch, they're great. You keep them wrapped as it is, and you could put them in any microwave because they're automatically double-wrapped. Mm. It even says so on the packaging, so it's perfect.
And have you had to be away during, let's say, during the Yomim Noraim and things like that, or have you been able to work it out that at least during that period of time you've been able to be back in Seattle?
Well, thank God I haven't been gone for any of those times yet, but I will be in the near future. For the Yomim Noraim in the next couple of seasons, I expect that I'll be gone. But I look at it as an opportunity to, in my deployed environment, be, again, the Jewish lay leader and either make a Rosh Hashanah service or Yom Kippur service, or help to augment one if there's one currently in existence. So, you know, it's sad to be away from family and to be away from a shul and an established community during those times, but we're put there for a reason. And if I'm deployed and flying missions, I can definitely ask for those days to volunteer as a Jewish lay leader and put together a program for the Amin Tovim so that other Jewish personnel on base who may not have the resources can come together and we can make a chag.
Right. Well, listen, all I can tell you is that you are indeed a Kiddush Hashem, serving this great country of ours that we love, and at the same time being true to your faith, to your religion, and you're an inspiration for a lot of the people who I know are going to listen to the program and say that you could do anything you want to do, and it doesn't mean you have to give up any of your religious principles at all. So, Yoni, thank you so much. It has been an absolute honor and pleasure to have Lieutenant Yonatan Goldstein, and we wish you the very, very best in the years to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And if I just may piggyback on that for a second,
please.
You mentioned that somebody should not, you know, lessen or change who they are. I think it actually does somebody a lot of benefit to strengthen who they are and be true to their beliefs, because your coworkers will see that and will see your sincerity and acknowledge it and go, wow, he's a real person. He really is who he says he is. And that serves somebody incredibly well throughout their life and throughout their career. And I also want to take an opportunity and quickly thank my family, especially my wife, Michelle. Without her support and her unconditional love and dedication, I could never, ever have even passed pilot training or any of the other tests that I've had in this career. It totally goes to her credit, 100%.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much, and best of luck, okay?
Okay, thank you. Have a great one.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.